Chapter 1. Coriolanus released the fistful of cabbage into the pot of boiling water and swore that one day it would never pass his lips again. But this was not that day. He needed to eat a large bowl of the anemic stuff and drink every drop of broth to prevent his stomach from growling during the reaping ceremony. It was one of a long list of precautions he took to mask the fact that his family, despite residing in the penthouse of the capital's most opulent apartment building, was as poor as district scum. That at 18, the heir to the once great house of snow had nothing to live on but his wits. His shirt for the reaping was worrying him. He had an acceptable pair of dark dress pants bought on the black market last year, but the shirt was what people looked at. Fortunately, the academy provided the uniforms it required for daily use. For today's ceremony, however, students were instructed to be dressed fashionably but with the solemnity the occasion dictated. Tigris had said to trust her, and he did. Only his cousin's cleverness with a needle had saved him so far. Still, he couldn't expect miracles. The shirt they dug from the back of the wardrobe, his father's, from better days, was stained and yellowed with age, half the buttons missing, a cigarette burn on one cuff, too damaged to sell in even the worst of times. And this was to be his reaping shirt? This morning he had gone to her room at daybreak, only to find both his cousin and the shirt missing. Not a good sign. Had Tigris given up on the old thing and braved the black market in some last-ditch effort to find him proper clothing? And what on earth would she possess worth trading for it? Only one thing, herself. And the House of Snow had not yet fallen that far. Or was it falling now as he salted the cabbage? He thought of people putting a price on her. With her long, pointed nose and skinny body, Tigris was no great beauty, but she had a sweetness, a vulnerability that invited abuse. She would find takers if she had a mind to. The idea made him feel sick and helpless and consequently disgusted with himself. From deep in the apartment, he heard the recording of the capital anthem, Gem of Panem, kick on. His grandmother's tremulous soprano voice joined in, bouncing off the walls.
Gem of Panem, mighty city, through the ages you shine anew.
As always, she was painfully off-key and slightly behind tempo. The first year of the war, she'd played the recording on national holidays for 5-year-old Coriolanus and 8-year-old Tigris in order to build their sense of patriotism. The daily recital hadn't begun until that black day when the district rebels had surrounded the capital, cutting it off from supplies for the remaining 2 years of the war.
"Remember, children," she'd say, "we are but besieged. We have not surrendered."
Then she would warble the anthem out of the penthouse window as the bombs rained down. Her small act of defiance.
"We humbly kneel to your ideal,"
and the notes she could never quite hit,
"and pledge our love to you."
Coriolanus winced a little. For a decade now, though the rebels had been silent, his grandmother had not. There were still 2 verses to go.
"Gem of Panem, heart of justice, wisdom crowns your marble brow."
He wondered if more furniture might absorb some of the sound, but the question was academic. At present, their penthouse apartment was a microcosm of the capital itself, bearing the scars of the relentless rebel attacks. The 20-foot-high walls were veined with cracks. The molded ceiling was dotted with holes for missing chunks of plaster, and ugly black strips of electrical tape held in place the broken glass of the arched windows that looked out over the city. Throughout the war and the decade that followed, the family had been forced to sell or trade many of its possessions, so that some rooms were entirely empty and closed off, and the others sparsely furnished at best. Even worse, during the bitter cold of the siege's final winter, several elegant carved wooden pieces and innumerable volumes of books had been sacrificed to the fireplace to keep the family from freezing to death. watching the bright pages of his picture books, the very ones he'd pored over with his mother, reduced to ashes, had never failed to bring him to tears. But better off sad than dead. Having been in his friends' apartments, Coriolanus knew that most families had begun to repair their homes, but the Snows could not even afford a few yards of linen for a new shirt. He thought of his classmates, rifling through their closets or slipping into their newly tailored suits, and wondered just how long he could keep up appearances.
"You give us light, you reunite, to you we make our vow."
If Tigris's revamped shirt was unwearable, what was he to do? Fake the flu and call in sick? Spineless. Soldier through in his uniform shirt? Disrespectful. Squeeze into the red button-down that he had outgrown 2 years ago? Poor. Acceptable option? None of the above. Perhaps Tigris had gone to ask help from her employer, Fabricia Whatnot, a woman as ridiculous as her name but with a certain talent for derivative fashion. Whether the trend was feathers or leathers, plastics or plush, she could find a way to incorporate it at a reasonable rate. Not much of a student, Tigris had foregone university when she'd graduated from the academy to pursue her dream of becoming a designer. She was supposed to be an apprentice, although Fabricia used her more as slave labor, requiring her to give foot massages and clean clumps of her long magenta hair from the drains. But Tigris never complained and would hear no criticism of her boss. So pleased and grateful was she to have a position in fashion.
"Gem of Panem, seat of power, strength in peacetime, shield in strife."
Coriolanus opened the refrigerator, hoping for something to liven up the cabbage soup. The sole occupant was a metal saucepan. When he removed the lid, a mush of congealed, shredded potatoes stared back at him. Had his grandmother finally made good her threat of learning to cook? Was the stuff even edible? He replaced the lid until he had more information to work with. What a luxury it would be to toss it in the trash without a second thought. What a luxury trash would be. He remembered, or thought he did, being very small and watching garbage trucks operated by avoxes. Tongueless workers made the best workers, or so his grandmother said, humming down the streets, emptying large bags of discarded food, containers, worn household items. Then came the time when nothing was disposable. No calorie unwanted, and no item unable to be traded or burned for heat or tucked against a wall for insulation. Everyone had learned to despise waste. It was creeping back into fashion, though. A sign of prosperity, like a decent shirt.
"Protect our land with armored hand."
The shirt. The shirt. His mind could fixate on a problem like that, anything really, and not let go. As if controlling one element of his world would keep him from ruin. It was a bad habit that blinded him to other things that could harm him. A tendency toward obsession was hardwired into his brain, and would likely be his undoing if he couldn't learn to outsmart it. His grandmother's voice squeaked out the final crescendo.
"Our capital, our life."
Crazy old woman, still clinging to the pre-war days. He loved her, but she'd lost touch with reality years ago. Every meal, she'd rattle on about the Snow's legendary grandeur, even when their fare consisted of watery bean soup and stale crackers. And to hear her tell it, it was a given that his future would be glorious.
"When Coriolanus is president,"
she often began.
"When Coriolanus is president."
Everything from the rickety Capitol Air Force to the exorbitant price of pork chops would be magically corrected. Thank goodness the broken elevator and her arthritic knees prevented her from going out much, and her infrequent visitors were as fossilized as she. The cabbage began to boil, filling the kitchen with the smell of poverty. Coriolanus jabbed at it with a wooden spoon. Still no Tigris. Soon it would be too late to call and make an excuse. Everyone would have assembled at the Academy's Heavensby Hall. There would be anger to deal with, as well as disappointment from his communications professor, Sotiria Click, who had campaigned for him to receive one of the 24 coveted mentorships in the Hunger Games. Besides being Sotiria's favorite, he was her teaching aide, and doubtless she would need him for something today. She could be unpredictable, especially when she'd been drinking, and that was a given on the day of the reaping. He'd better call and warn her. Say he couldn't stop vomiting or something, but would do his best to recover. He steeled himself and picked up the phone to plead dire illness when another thought hit him. If he failed to show, would she allow them to replace him as a mentor? And if she did, would that weaken his chance for one of the Academy prizes presented at graduation? Without such a prize, he had no way to afford to go to university, which meant no career, which meant no future, not for him. And who knew what would happen to the family? And the front door warped and complaining scraped open.